Now let's welcome our speaker tonight, Pat.
Hello, everyone. My name is Pat, and I'm an alcoholic. I needed to walk carefully because it would be just my luck to be just walking and fall in front of a lot of people. If you're new, and I did see quite a few people raise their hands as newcomers, I just want to say welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous and let you know that the program works real well, works one day at a time, and if you be alcoholic like me, it works real slow. And before I forget, I want to thank Rose via my friend John for asking me to come out and share my experience, strength, and hope. I've been here several times, and it seems to me that every time I come here to share, there's always something up in my life. Last time I was here, I had taken my goddaughter, who at the age of 12, to come and live with me because her mother had passed away. My goddaughter has special needs, and you know, I've been single all of my life, and you know, I felt like it was the right thing to do, and so we began this journey. And at that time, I was here, and I was talking to you about that journey, and you cheered me on, and I just want to say thank you. Fortunately, after about a year, she decided she wanted to go live with her father. And I cheered her on. The experience was transformative for both of us. So this is my sobriety month, and I'm really grateful. As I stated before, my sobriety date is December 10th, 1988. I don't know if I said that, but there it is. And I got here on what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous calls an impending sense of doom. And what that translates to is that somebody was going to kill me. I knew it, and I did not have the power to stop it. And I probably would have gotten here to Alcoholics Anonymous anyway. I mean, I got sober in my early 20s. I'm learning how not to say specifically, you know, early 20s. And I'm grateful for getting here that early. You know, I share really transparently, and this is as transparent with everything that I'll say tonight, and that is that, you know, I'm an alcoholic who was driven to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous under the lash of crack cocaine. Now, I'm absolutely certain that I would have got here anyway, but instead I got here on that 747 called crack. And I'm absolutely grateful. I want to tell you from the beginning that I do not know what it's like to be hungry, mistreated, or inappropriately touched. That is not my story. I share that with you because when I was visiting you people in February of 1988, I was really listening for the differences because I did not want to be alcoholic. I was bright. I've always been brighter than the average bear. And I knew that in Alcoholics Anonymous, they were talking about not drinking. And I know that they meant forever, ever, one day at a time. And so alcohol was an essential part of my life. It was the navigator. It was the thing that helped me to continue one day at a time. And I was committed, and I did not want to have to stop drinking. I understood clearly that I might want to leave that crack alone, but I did not want to stop drinking. And as a result, being compelled here because of a family intervention, and it looked like they went around the room, well, they held a family meeting, and then they invited me. And then they began to go around the room talking about why they thought it was a good idea for me to go and get some help. But my truth in February of 1988, not my truth, the thing that I was thinking was that if they would just leave me alone, I would be all right. Because you see, there had been times in my drinking career where it seemed as though that I was functioning in my dysfunction. And I was consumed with this one thought that somehow, some way, someday, I will be able to control and enjoy my drinking again. And so in February, when they were having that conversation, I was like, if they would just leave me alone, I will be all right. But they would not concede. They had my back up against the wall. And so I consented to go to an outpatient program, which sent me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I met you people in February of 1988, and I was not a believer. When I say that, I didn't mean that I didn't believe that it worked for you. See, when I got here in 1988, I really was impressed with you in February. I mean, it was a lot of people. It was a lot of young people getting sober at the time, just like it is now. And I remember you got to the podiums. You shared your stories. You made me laugh. You entertained me well. It's just that I wasn't an alcoholic, you know. But I heard your story, and I was glad that you had found home. And so in February, I began to listen for the differences, and I began to hear people talk about the tragedy of their upbringing, and I sat in my seat and thought to myself, ooh, maybe I'm not an alcoholic, because that did not happen to me. And so I share that with you because the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, while it is dated, I believe that it is true today. And it says it simply finds me bodily and mentally different than my fellows. That includes my siblings. I am the only one of my siblings that suffers from this disease. Now, I'm not saying that they're normal, but they don't suffer from this disease. And so I was visiting you people in February of 1988, listening for the differences. And if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, we encourage you to listen for the similarities. And it's okay if you don't like my pitch, because I'm sure the week after next, there'll be another great speaker that you might be able to identify with. And so I left the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous not conceding to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. But by the time I made it back in December of 1988, it was a Sunday, as a matter of fact, and they went around the room and they did the reading and they asked if there were any other alcoholics present. I raised both my hands, one for alcoholic and one for addict, just in case. I just did not want to be left out. And my only question was, what did you say I had to do in order to not drink again? You know, it is my personal belief that my level of desperation parallels my level of willingness. And it is my willingness that determines the actions that I will take. And I'm so grateful that I was desperate enough to be willing to take your suggestions. I mean, the truth was is that I had no more tricks up my sleeve or in my bag. I was done. You could have stuck a fork in me. It was over. And what I was clear about is that there was nothing in and of myself that I could do to stop me from taking the next drink, because I had tried everything that I could to stay sober, because who wants to come to Alcoholics Anonymous in their 20s? I mean, surely there's a party or two left. But it wasn't. The street lights had come on, and it was time for me to come inside, and I did. And what happened was is that I was embraced by the people of Alcoholics Anonymous before I got a sponsor, before I worked a step, before I read the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous that captured me. I got in the middle of the herd, and you people told me, just do what we do. And what we do is we go to meetings. I remember they asked me a very pertinent question. They said, now, do you have a job? And I was like, well, no. Because, see, by the time I got here, I was unemployable. In fact, I was unemployable, uneducated, and did not have a sense of self. I was lost. But you smiled when I told you that I didn't have a job, and you said, great, because we have morning meetings, we have noon meetings, and we have night meetings, and you can be at all three. And so that's what I did, because I didn't have any place else to go. I did not have any place else to go. This was the last house on the block. And you told me to keep coming back. And my life has never been the same. You know, I am not the same person. And what I can tell you, newcomer, and with absolute honesty, is that I am better. I am better. I haven't managed to do anything perfectly, but I am better. I am better than I was. When I measure me by me, I am so much better. And if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, that is your only measuring stick. You by you. You by yesterday, you by the day before you got here. That's your measuring stick. I began to do the deal of Alcoholics Anonymous and became engaged in the process of recovery, identified as the 12 steps of recovery. I got a sponsor, and that sponsor began to take me through that process, and it was transformative for me. See, I don't do the deal of Alcoholics Anonymous because simply you said it and because of your story. I continue to do the work of Alcoholics Anonymous because I know that it works. I'm just not that good of a person that, you know, will do things just because you say it's the good thing to do. I'm suspicious by nature. to the day, I'm suspicious, but okay. And so I began to do the deal because I received my own confirmation. If you knew, I remember dealing with the obsession to drink. And I didn't really know what to do about that, but the people of Alcoholics Anonymous did. And I was telling them, well, I hear you talking about, this and that, but, I can't control what thought comes to my mind. And they were like, Pat, you're right. You're right. You cannot control the thought that comes to your mind. But what you can control is what you choose to meditate on. And so here's what we suggest that you do. When the thought comes to your mind, because you sound like you might be a real alcoholic like us, do not play the tape all the way through, because you might get stuck on the turn up. So what we want you to do is we want you to pray. Every time the thought to drink comes to your mind, we want you to pray. And see, by then, my relationship or my fellowship with God, as I understand God, had been broken a long time ago. And I was like, well, what am I going to say? What should I say? And so they say, God, please don't let me drink and use today no matter what, and please remove the thought. And see, by now I'm about 90 days sober, but I'm still struggling with the thought. And I'm thinking to myself, because, you know, even while I'm struggling, my ego is slowly being rebuilt. And so I'm telling them, you want me to say it out loud? What if somebody sees me talking to myself? And they said, no worries. Your reputation is already shot. And so I would be walking down the street in public places or wherever. And when the thought came, I would be, God, please don't let me drink and use today no matter what. And please remove the thought. God, please don't let me drink and use today no matter what. And please remove the thought. And I just did that because that's what you told me to do. And one day, I didn't say the prayer. And the reason I didn't say the prayer is because I hadn't had the thought. I don't know what day that was. But I've been free from the obsession, the merciless obsession to drink and use since that time. It is not something I've had to really contend with. Now, I've had some other thoughts that were dangerous. But then I've gotten lessons from you people in Alcoholics Anonymous that have helped me too. See, when I was about 8 years sober, of doing a deal, you know, having a life and, you know, just living and enjoying being free, I got a call about 2 o'clock in the morning asking a question. Did you hear? What? It's 2 o'clock. What? Did you hear about Curtis and Diane? With some friends in my Alcoholics Anonymous community, very close. Boy had met girl on AA campus, and they really, really were doing the thing. You probably know some people like that. Don't raise your hand. And did you hear? And it was like, what? Well, you know, Curtis killed Diane, and then he killed himself. And it was all without a drink. And so what I got out of that was like, we get real clearly to not drink and drug no matter what, but we don't necessarily get don't kill anyone and don't kill ourselves. And so, you know, that was so painful. It sent a shockwave in my sober community. And I was asking God, so there's supposed to be a lesson in everything. What am I supposed to be getting out of this? And so what surfaced for me was to never become invested in an image in Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, oh, it looks, but how you really living? And so Alcoholics Anonymous for me, from that day forward, has become the safe place. It has become the place where I come and I tell the truth, where I can expose myself. It is out there where I might put my gang face on because, you know, it's about money out there. But in here, it's about my life. And I need for you people to be able to be a part of my life. I need to be free here. I need some place. I need some people that I can talk to without editing. And that has been a grace in my life, newcomer, that I've always had people in Alcoholics Anonymous that I could talk to without editing. Not just about what I'm doing, but about what I'm thinking. When I was about 15 years sober, I began to manifest a fear of premature death. And what that looked like for me was that somebody would be talking, did you hear about Susie? You know, she had kidney failure. And I'd be going like, ooh, my bag. Did you hear about John? He had an aneurysm. And I'd be like, come on. My head. You know, did you hear about Anne? You know, she had breast cancer. And I'd be like, I think I feel something. And it was festering in silence. It was a secret. And it was a secret because most people knew by then that I had reestablished my relationship with God as I understand God. And in fact, I had begun to pursue ministry as a vocation. And so people would say little snide things to me. It's very interesting to me that the people of Alcoholics Anonymous is how wonderful you could be, can also be so cutting. You know, how you can be callous with other people's pain when it is not yours. And they would say stuff like, you know, what's the problem? Don't in your faith tradition, when you die, you go to be with your God? And I would be like, yeah, I mean, I want to go to heaven. I just don't want to die to get there. You feel me? I don't see why that's so hard to understand. So I wasn't talking about it. And one day what happened to me is what we experience, new people, what only happens in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous, the power of one alcoholic talking to another. And what happened was that since I thought I was going to die any minute, a friend called me and says, you know, I'm going to go to New York, watch the ball drop, and, you know, go to a play on, you know, Broadway. By the way, The Color Purple was out. And I was like, well, cool, yeah, let's go. You know, the bills weren't going to matter. Nothing was going to matter. It's about the experiences. And so we get to New York, and my friend, she had this tradition, my friend Bobby, and she had this tradition where at the change of a new year. She would make a list of that which she wanted to leave behind in the old year, and then another list of that which she wanted to bring forward into the new year. And she shared that process with me. And as we did as she did her list, she shared some things that just shook me and resonated with me because of the depth of what she shared. Because she shared with me, it freed me to share with her my secret. And my secret, I told her, Bobby, I have a fear of premature death, that I'm going to die any minute. And she looked me in my eye. She didn't laugh and she didn't smirk. She simply said, Pat, you know, that is a fear common to many human beings. But what I want you to know is that no matter how many meetings I go to, no matter how many people I sponsor, no matter how good of a program I work in, no matter how profoundly my life affects another human being, she looked me in my eyes, she says, I'm going to die, and there's absolutely nothing I can do about it. So rather than focus on the imminent, something of which I can do nothing about, she said, I think my real concern would be not living and then dying. And that did something to me. And I looked her in her eyes and I said, you're right. I'm going to die. I just don't know when. And so I think my real concern would be not living and then dying. And if you knew the Alcoholics Anonymous, essentially that is our hope for you too, that you come here and take what we have to offer so that one day you too can live before you die. And what that did was that set me on a course that helped me to turn a curve. I told you that I got here and I was uneducated and I was lost. And what happened, I began to really notice the people of Alcoholics Anonymous who went back to school in their recovery. I didn't pay too much attention to those who had already done it because, you know, I was always looking for the differences and I had to always fight and struggle with that to see that to say that you're different from me. So I was really focusing on those who had messed it all up, you know, before they even had a chance to become. And there were people in Alcoholics Anonymous who were going to school and who were recreating their lives. And so I watched them. And I'm still 15. And what happened for me is that I got a scholarship through work to an executive leadership program in Sausalito. And they were flying in heads from all over the world, heads of major corporations like Shell and NASA and other government agencies, and I was in the room too. And I remember when they were standing up and they were going around the room and they were identifying themselves and talking about who they were, the thought came to me prior to them getting to me was, who is it I'm going to say that I am? Who am I going to say that I am? It was pressure unlike anything that I had ever felt, and I, at that moment, was the only one that looked like me in that room, and I was in a quandary. And so I just simply said my name. You know, my name is Pat Parker, and, you know, I'm glad to be here. And I thought I had gotten away with it. They were curious about me. Anyway, so what happened was that they broke us into small groups. And in that small group, it was a bit more intimate, and people went into detail about who they were. And they started having conversations that were just above my information level at that time. You know, first person would start talking about, I understood Democrat and Republican, and I did go to high school, but he was talking about being a libertarian, and I was trying to figure out. Then he went on into some detail about the net income of he and his wife, you know, that year. And he was saying it was a bad year, and it was like $500,000. I kind of got stuck right there. But I held my, and so by the time they got to me, I figured out who I was. And this is what I told him. I said, my name is, Pat, and I have a PhD in theology. I run a small nonprofit. Our budget is only about $8 million. We've just recently got a donation from Apple to have all of their equipment. I have 8 full-time employees, and I allow them to play Smurf games for stressfully at work. And they just accepted me in the group. But the only thing about that was true was that my name was Pat Parker. Yeah. And so I went back to my hotel that night, and I tossed and I turned, and I couldn't sleep. And the reason why I couldn't sleep, because see, it had been a long time since I had found it necessary to lie about who I was. And so what I did was I called home. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning. I called one of my good friends, my good friend Walter, and I was telling him about what I was experiencing. And he was like, you know, he just kind of like walked me through it. And I tossed and turned the rest of the night. I couldn't wait to get back to the, you know, the seminar center. And when I got back there, I went up to my coach, the coach that was assigned to me. I said, listen, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've done something. And what we do is we make amends. I lied. This is what I did. And I need to go and make it right. And so on my way to go make it right, she grabbed me and pulled me back. She said, that is not necessary here. She said, but I do have one question for you. She said, what is it that you need to do in order to be all right with you? And when she said it, I know it. I said, I need to go back to school and complete my education. And so Bobby had planted seeds. And I was clear that it was really about the business of living. And I was also clear that since God had given me freedom, that it was in my hand. And the real question was, what are you going to do with it? And so I went back to school. And as I began to go back to school, I began to just get turned on to education. And miracles happened for me. Now, as I share with you my story, what I want you to know is that the miracle, if you're sitting in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous and you have not taken a drink, has already happened. There have been great miracles. Probably the most profound one is that not only do I not drink, but I no longer want to. And if you're new and you have that, oh man, you got quite a bit. You got quite a bit. And so I went on to complete my education, and you know, as a result, I was able to receive fellowships to Harvard Divinity School and also to Claremont School of Theology, where I got a chance to really be exposed to things that I would not ordinarily be exposed to. You know, I grew up in Watts in the Jordan Down Projects. My mother was a single parent with 4 children. She was on welfare, and she had a job, and eventually she worked and saved money after a long time, and then she took us out of the projects, not very far from them. Right on the border of Watts. And we had the essential thing. And the essential thing was love. In fact, I just want to pause here and say this to you in case you're in the room and you're still tripping about your family. You know, if love was enough to not be alcoholic, then I would not be. I've always had people in my life who loved me and were committed to making my life work. And yet, I find myself in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, today, you know, this has been a very challenging year for me. It's been great. It's been bittersweet. You know, I'm kind of like doing what I want to do, where I want to do it. I'm surrounded by people that are absolutely supportive, and I'm having an impact in the area that I want to have an impact in. But then my brother died. And man, my father died in 2009. He had been sick, and you know, we kind of expected that. And you know, you kind of expect your parents to die before you do. It's just, you know, the natural course of things, you know, as we expect them. But then when a sibling dies, it just kind of like, I was on like tilt. You know what I mean? Because you expect your siblings to be with you forever. And my brother died of a massive heart attack a month before his 55th birthday. And it was just so very painful. You know, what I'm learning in this season is that I do believe that pain is a loose, that the grief is a loose spirit. It comes and goes whenever it gets ready. I mean, it is not packaged conveniently or prettily. You know, I'm sometimes driving down the street, and it's interesting that I'm noticing myself is that I really want to be past it. I want to be okay already. And then I'll be driving down the street listening to some music, and it'll remind me of either my brother or a time when we were all safe and together, and I'll just start crying. You know, the blessing is that I'm no longer pushing grief away. I'm allowing it to come simply so that it can pass. What I'm being surrounded by are the people of Alcoholics Anonymous with their stories. You know, that we don't drink and we don't use, and that, you know, I've heard you over the years say that your parents died and you didn't drink, and your siblings died and your mates died and you still didn't drink. And so this is the fellowship that I crave. You are my tribe, and what you teach me to do by just continuing to come back and not drinking is that we live. We live. You know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous gives us an opportunity to get in contact with a power greater than ourselves, that we might be able to live our lives with unresolved issues. Meaning that it ain't all fixed. Sometimes it ain't all right. But I'm not drinking today. You know, and I don't know where you are in your sobriety or the struggles that you're dealing with. I mean, you know, you don't need a vision for you when it's smooth. The vision for you is when it's difficult and you have to trudge to walk greatly with purpose. You know, and I've been able to do that thus far in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think my time is up, right? Okay.
Thank you.
I apologize, I went into your question and answer period, so we'll begin that right now. Who would like to start? I'll acknowledge hands.
And how did you balance your AA life with school, and how long did it take you to acclimate, to feel comfortable back in school and to be like
that? When I went back to school, how long did it take me to acclimate to academia and that pursuit? Was there more to that, or was that succinct? Undergrad was okay. Was pretty cool. I started tripping, though, when I went to named schools, because I really still felt like I wasn't enough. And as I begin to dig through inventory, I find that my driving idea is not enoughness. It is what I've always contended with, and it's what I contend with now. It is on the inside. And I've found out that nothing on the outside can touch what's wrong on the inside. You can go wherever you want to go, but if not enoughness is still there, it's just there. It doesn't really fix it. And so my truth is that I struggled being in places where I thought it was odd for me to be. Now, the people that I was around, they just embraced me, but I walked around with that feeling. And it is only in the past few years, at another level, with God as I understand God, that I am quite comfortable in my own skin. You know, that I've reached a level of clarity really about who I am and what I consider purpose to be. And it began with carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's been able to expand. And so when I get out of myself and understand that where I am and what it is I'm called to do is more than about me, then I seem to be more at ease, although I can trip. Now, I won't tell you that if Oprah walked in the room and said, hey, Pat, that I wouldn't trip. But what I can say is that today, it doesn't matter who's in the room, I'm enough. Yes, ma'am. Oh, you know what? I really needed a lot of support. The year that I had with my niece, how did I work the program with that? You know what? I was always looking at myself because, you know, she was 12, she turned to 13, and I think something happens with children at around 13. I think it's some kind of insanity. I'm not, you know, and I was looking at her and I was thinking, I said that 7 times. I don't, you know, so I'm always looking at me and the patience and tolerance that I needed to employ towards a newcomer is what I had to employ towards her. And I was not always successful. I found myself going off several times, you know, but then I'd come back and, you know, try to get it right. And we have a relationship today, and she considers me a safe place. And I guess that's the most I can ask. Yes.
Your higher power change as you joined the ministry, as you, you know, got your, or did, was your higher power the same all the
time? Did my higher power change as I grew in alcoholics?
No, as you grew in ministry.
Did my higher power change as I grew in ministry? No, I went back to the tradition of my childhood because that's what resonated to me. It did not change. However, my understanding of God has increased. So there's a term in Alcoholics Anonymous, a God of your understanding. I do not translate it as such. I translate it as God as I understand God, being that I believe that God simply is and that I come into an understanding of God, and that is, it evolves based on experiences that I have. Yes. I can trace it as far back as, where did I get the idea that I'm not enough? Where did it come from? As far back as I can trace it, it came from my relationship with my father. My grandfather stood in my father's place, my father's father. My grandfather was also a pastor, a Christian missionary, who nurtured my intellect and loved me. He was one of the great loves of my life. And I longed for a relationship with my father. My father was pretty young when I was born, and he was not capable of having a father-daughter relationship with me. And he was out doing his own thing, but because I knew he was my father, that's what I wanted. Even though his father stood in his place, I still wanted my father. Eventually, my father grew up. He married a woman that he loved and had a child. And since I was in the environment, I began to watch him parent my sister, though he never parented me. And as a child without filters, I internalized his stuff. And I thought to myself, and I can remember the thought, what's wrong with me that my dad doesn't love me like he loves my sister? And even though I understand it intellectually, there is still a residue. And if you knew the Alcoholics Anonymous, there may be scars. There may be a residue. And you'll be able to live with that without taking a drink. Yes? Two. The first amends, can I talk about the my amends process? Going through steps 1 through 8, getting to 9. I had just become willing to do whatever. There was one amends. I had stole somebody's dope. I was in the house. And I stole their guns, and I sold it to the enemy around the corner down the street. But I always looked nice and innocent, and no one would have thought that it was me. And so there was this guy who they thought probably did it. And I heard them talking about what they were going to do to him when they got there. It would seem like I would say, don't, but I couldn't tell the truth. I was incapable of being honest. What happened was the guy was on his way over to that place. He had a warrant. He got stopped driving and went to jail. I had gotten sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had told this was on my inventory, and my sponsor said that you will have to make an amends regarding that. And I was scared because I didn't know what was going to happen, but I was willing and I was prayerful. And one day I was walking to down the street to the clubhouse. It wasn't the clubhouse, the meeting place that I was going to, in the neighborhood that I came from. And as I was walking, this guy was walking towards me, and it was the guy that they were going to kill. And I looked at him. Couldn't run. I said, hey, you know, listen, I'm so glad to see you. And I just told him, I said, I just want to tell you that I'm sorry. I'm glad nothing happened to you. I just want you to know it was me. I'm the one that took the dope and the guns. And he told me, he said, I know. I said, but I'm in this program. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they tell us, to make things right. And I just want to know what I need to do in order to make it right. This was in my first year. And he looked at me. He said, we cool. Just keep doing what you're doing. And he walked on down the street. And I kept walking towards the meeting. It was just set up to be successful in Alcoholics Anonymous and encouraged me to keep going. That process. I don't think I have time for it anymore, but hopefully. I'm sorry, I'm just. I'm sorry? Keep coming back. Oh, his question was, what's my advice to a person who wants to be sober but keeps relapsing? And I said, keep coming back. Because if you've been doing it for a while, there are probably a lot of people in your life in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous who have been telling you about the process. And you've probably been to meetings and heard profound speakers. And you've probably been able to identify, and something even in your spirit has resonated. I don't know what it's going to take for you, and I don't know if sobriety will ever manifest for you. I can't tell you that. What I did is that I prayed and asked God to help me, and I gave you a prayer, gave somebody who can use it, a prayer that they could use. See, the truth about Alcoholics Anonymous is that it really takes what it takes. It takes a level of surrender, and I don't know what it will take for a person in order to surrender. In fact, I don't even know if they will. There are many people who die and never recover. There are people who never reach Alcoholics Anonymous. There are people who come to Alcoholics Anonymous, leave Alcoholics Anonymous, and never make it back because they suffer from the great delusion. And it is this, that when I get tired, I'll come back. That when I'm done, or when it gets bad, I'll just come back. Not realizing that the oomph to even come back, the willingness to even walk into the room, comes from God. So if you hear and you know, I would say, suggest that you take a look at your relationship with alcohol and see if you'd be one of us. Because see, if you're not an alcoholic, you're free to leave. You do not have to keep coming back. However, if you are an alcoholic and you leave us, there's no guarantee that you'll make it back. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says this, prophetically, that for you, there are jails, institutions, and death. That we know. If you're lucky, death will come soon. But if you're not, you will linger long and then die. And so if you're here, I just want to encourage you to stay. Take what we have to offer so that you can live. Rarely have we seen a person fail. Rarely, meaning almost never, who has thoroughly followed our path. And only you know, not your sponsor and not your friend and not your mate, nobody knows. If you've done it thoroughly, the proof is in the pudding.
How often do you talk to God and how do you talk to God?
All the time, man. Just like I'm talking to you because I believe that God is. I believe God is real, right? And so I'm always talking to God, you know, because I need God to stay sane, to stay sober, to stay effective. And so I'm talking to God all the time. I mean, really, I was on the way over here. I was in traffic. I was experiencing some anxiety. There were some people that were supposed to ride with me, and I was hopeful because then I would be able to get into the diamond lane, right? And say, but instead, you know, I'm caught in traffic, and as time is passing, I'm feeling myself becoming more anxious because it's like I'm going to be late for the meeting, and I'm the speaker. And so what I started doing is I started talking to God. I said, God, you know, I'm going to be of service. And I said, you know, I'm going with all them white folks, and they trip when black people are. And then the black people in the room are going to be looking at me, talking about, you know, you were coming over to the west side. How are you going to be late? I said, God, please, you know, help me get to the meeting on time. Do whatever you got to do. Open up traffic. Give me another way to get here. But please, I don't want to be late to the meeting. I got here on time. Last question, sir. Mm-hmm. I seem to have been able to stay sober for 27 years. He calls that success. And wants to know what my daily life is like in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll give you the look at a week. First of all, I'm an alcoholic, so I have a sponsor because I need a sponsor. I talk to my sponsor. I'm in a Big Book workshop with my sponsor currently on Friday nights at 7 o'clock where she has us doing some writing. Sometimes I dread to go because I don't always have my writing assignment done, but I go anyway. I sponsor people because that's how I've been trained in Alcoholics Anonymous, that no matter what's going on in my life, no matter how large I'm living, I better be sponsoring some people if they ask me to sponsor them. So I just got a new sponsee, and I cringe, you know, when I go speak because I'm like, oh, my God, what, you know. But I work with others. I'm currently of service to my mother. The goddaughter left, and then my mother moved in. So I'm serving at home. I have a job where I serve, in multiple areas. And so, and I go to meetings. And I like to go to meetings where I won't be asked to share. I like to go to meetings where people, you know, are my friends, my people, and I can get and sit in the meeting and I can hear other people talk because I'm an alcoholic and I need to hear other people share. I go to work. I get up in the morning because I've been practicing gratitude. I decided not to wait for Thanksgiving in order to be thankful. I don't want to wait for the Institute today. And so I've been practicing really being grateful. So I wake up in the morning and I'm really thanking God. And then I go through what my routine is based on my personal tradition. And then at night, you know, me and my mother are talking and, you know, and we say goodnight to one another and I thank God for a good day. And just I'm living. I'm hoping to be in a relationship relatively soon so I'll be able to talk to you about how I'm working that with my partner. And that was it.